Welcome aboard this edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. On this first day of July in the year 2020, we have a July 4th weekend coming up. But state and local governments all across the country are making sure you are going to enjoy it. Bless their hearts. Bless our hearts. Happy Hanukkah. It is a Wednesday edition of the podcast, the first day of July, and we are looking forward to an interesting day today. Around our parts, life is wet. It's been raining all night long. As we were turning off lights and heading for bed last night, there were thunderstorms passing through our area, and it was bumpy, but I enjoy going to sleep to the rain. You know, I really do. And the light show is just sort of a bonus feature. Nothing exciting to report in personal life. I spent some time yesterday doing web work. Not like Spider-Man, but working on a website, refining things. And it's been this long, slow process of getting a website put together. And this is kind of the way it works anyway. You spend a lot of time cranking something out, and then you wait. It's kind of like the movie business where they write a story and they start production and they go back and rewrite parts, and then they realize certain things won't work, and then they have to reshoot things. And it's a lot like that. It's a process, and we're pushing towards a goal, and we're getting there fairly quickly. It is it's a good day here. I don't have a heck of a lot going on aside for today's podcast, which means I can get back into the garage and get back on working on the cleanup / organization there. I'm at a point right now, quite honestly, where if the last part of my parts order would come in, I could go ahead and start tearing a car up and putting it back together again. But it hasn't. I haven't received a notice from Flying Miata to let me know that my kit is on the way, so I can't do anything without that. Just in case you're just joining the party, I have a 1991 Mazda MX-5 Miata. In Japan, they called it the Roadster, and it is it's about to be 30 years old. It has like 250,000 miles on it. It's at one time, it was in the hands of somebody in Atlanta who built drift cars, Miata drift cars, race cars, and it's had some work done to it, but it is basically a stock Miata. And a couple of years ago, it started giving me trouble burning some oil. It was leaking a lot of oil at one point, which meant that there was an issue. And I had to have the cylinder head honed and reinstalled. And they did some valve work at the time, but it's leaking. And the valve stem seals are leaking. The old ones are bad. I've replaced them once. I went cheap on the replacement parts, and they failed on me pretty quickly. So now I keep oil in the trunk. I always keep oil in the trunk of the car because you just never know. You can start off on a day's adventure and everything is just fine. Then you stop someplace, you get out, you go ramble around and see things, or you eat a meal or something like that, and you come back and you turn the ignition switch and it's going clickety, 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 clickety because it's low on oil. So you have to top the oil off. And it uses enough that I actually don't do oil changes. It's constantly changing. So hopefully after this time, I can actually do an oil and filter change, and it will hold on to it, and I can do another couple of things to it I'd like to get done. But I still can't do anything until the kit comes in from Flying Miata. And when that comes in, I'll be replacing those valve stem seals and just all kinds of other things. Just a regular maintenance thing, replacing seals and gaskets. Wow, excuse me, that was weird. Seals and gaskets, and and hopefully getting back on the road in a day or so. I hope so. We enjoy the little car. We really do. It's not a show car. It's got a dent in one door. It's got paint peeling off in some places, but it's our baby, and it's kind of our therapy. And that's the thing. My wife actually said so a couple of weeks ago. We had gone someplace and just took the Miata because it was a nice evening, and we went to grab a bite to eat someplace and to run a couple of errands, and when we were through with that, we took the long way home through the country, and she said, now this is therapy. And that's one of the reasons we have it, because at the end of a stressful day or a stressful week, we can hop in it and just go out in the countryside and enjoy the world with the top down, letting the air blow through, and just, there's nothing like a little convertible, especially a little manual convertible if you enjoy driving. But that's the story on that. Anyway, let's see. You know, I like to start off with a little bit of absurdity, if at all possible. And there's this story that's been circulating for the last couple of days. And I honestly haven't spent much time paying much attention to it. But finally, I just have to.
Thank you for being a friend.
Yeah, sometimes when you don't get the joke, it's because you are the joke. Apparently, humorless executives at the Hulu streaming service were finding out we're finding out Monday as word spread about the company's decision to pull a harmless episode of the 1980s and 90s sitcom The Golden Girls from its lineup. They found out they were the joke because of an extended joke involving blackface. Yeah. It really didn't involve anybody actually wearing blackface, and it served as a way to provide comic relief in an otherwise tense scene involving an interracial engagement between a young white man and an older black woman. Now, given that the Golden Girls wasn't known for high tension in the first place, it did take jabs at social commentary from a typically liberal position from time to time. It would take an idiot of rare distinction to drum up offense at this season 3 episode that features Betty White undergoing beauty treatment with Rue McClanahan's character Blanche and declaring to a visiting black family, "Oh, this is mud on our faces. We're not really black." It says a lot about the year 2020 when Golden Girls humor is too subtle for a company executive petrified that the woke mob might be on the doorstep at any moment, pitchforks high and torches aflame. Well, during the episode, Bea Arthur's Dorothy finds out her 20-something son is planning to marry a black woman in her 40s. When the intended's own family appears, a mother and two aunts, hilarity doesn't quite ensue, but it's funny enough for a Golden Girls episode. It even makes points about race and relationships that most Americans could agree with, and certainly jives with the beliefs progressives claim to hold. The point here is that the mud packs worn by White and McClanahan's characters weren't supposed to be blackface. It's a joke about blackface. Anyone with an IQ higher than the drinking age would be able to figure that one out. But stark, senseless fear has a way of making anyone do stupid things. And decisions like the one just made by the painfully liberal Hulu shows just how petrified certain segments of the American population are right now. And petrified people do some staggeringly stupid things. And what's really funny, though, is judging by a good percentage of the social media response, even supporters of the Black Lives Matter movement were put off by the Hulu decision. Apparently, even men and women who think defunding police departments to leave honest Americans at the mercy of criminals is the pinnacle of reason have a breaking point when it comes to accepting the inane. They're even accusing Hulu of deliberately trying to make the whole Black Lives Matter movement look deficient in intellect. For example, here are a few of the tweets. Hulu has removed an episode of The Golden Girls in which characters wear mud face masks. The episode was removed due to concerns over racism. Well, just so you know, black people never asked for that. They're doing that so people can criticize the BLM movement. Another says, corporations are like divorced dads, buying random stuff to buy their kids love, who they don't really understand. I bought you an egg station so you can play Mario. Is that what you like? Mario, right? Another says, they're definitely bringing this to the extreme so the general public will get fed up and start complaining when companies do something like this. This way, companies don't have to care about racial issues anymore to be on the public side. And then there's this one. Absolutely no one asked for this. Not a single soul. Not one individual on the planet. They're just trying to undermine the BLM movement and make it look petty. Well, if we're going to be honest, it didn't take a dumb decision by Hulu execs to make the BLM movement look petty. Black Lives Matter activists, with their sham uncompromising idealism that's simply thuggishness in action, well, they took care of that. And when idiotic calls to defund police to protect blacks from violence result in a zone in Seattle where a black man can be shot and killed, actually more than one, because law enforcement can't get to him, and a teenager can be shot and die after being taken to a nearby hospital, any American who's paying attention can see the problem. What it comes down to is there are outlets for any American to petition the government for redress of grievances. And in the case of black Americans, the mainstream media has been exquisitely attuned to allegations of police violence against blacks since the hands up, don't shoot lies grew up in Ferguson, Missouri back in 2014. The riots that followed the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis were unnecessary, and every intellectually honest person knows it. The looting that blew up was more about material gain than any social progress, and again, any intellectually honest person knows it. The fact that American corporations are currently terrified of being the next target of the fascistic cancel culture means there are likely to be more decisions like the ones Hulu just made about the Golden Girls by spineless university administrators, by opportunistic Democratic politicians, by insecure executives in the entertainment world. They're the ones who've been feeding the fake grievance crowd supporting Black Lives Matter. They're the ones who are most vulnerable to the changing whims of wokeism. Much of the sane part of America came to the correct conclusion about the Black Lives Matter movement's rapacious pettiness a long time ago. And that number's only likely to grow in the months heading into November, as more and more foolishness like this becomes part of the cultural landscape. Since the events in Minneapolis in May, liberal politicians and the mainstream media that support them have been more or less openly optimistic that the unrest will lead to the defeat of President Donald Trump in November. If idiocy like this pulled Golden Girls episode continues, and it almost certainly will, it's a good chance they're going to find out the joke really is on them. And that is my hope, that decent, honest people will take a look at the entire situation and realize how ludicrous this all actually is and vote for sanity in November. Because this kind of reactionism certainly is not sanity. If a streaming network will pull an episode of an 80s sitcom because of a joke about blackface, because they believe it's racially insensitive, when the entirety of the episode itself is actually about tolerance and acceptance, that just means they're really not paying attention. They're not really responding, because response takes involvement, personal involvement. You have to be personally involved, really involved, to actually respond to something. But you don't have to be actually involved to react. Reaction is a knee-jerk. Response is considered. If Hulu actually was considering, they would have considered everything, not just what it looked like and who they might offend and whose side they would rather be on. if Hulu was actually involved, they would have left it alone and not said a word about it. And when somebody raised a hand and said, hey, what about that episode with the Golden Girls in blackface? Hulu would have said, you need to watch the episode. They're not in blackface, they're mud packs. They made a joke about blackface. It was a joke against blackface. Nice try. Thanks for playing. See the lady at the big front desk in the big hair for your check. Buh-bye. But no, they didn't do that. They tried to pacify and placate. They reacted. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you along today. You ever get the feeling somebody's... Oh, it's the theme music. It's the first day of July, 2020. And just as a quick reminder, taking the day off on Friday. My wife is off work. We're planning on some things. Gonna just relax, sleep late, escape. Maybe go for a drive in a little smoky car. You never know. Anyway, gonna be taking the third off. Be back on the Monday on July 6th. Okay? All right. Just so you know. Just so we're on the same page. Did you write that down? On a small child, family pet? Okay. Put a note on the fridge. Whatever. Won't be here Friday. Just so you know. Okay. All righty then. Let's see. I get back to where I was. I do this thing during the breaks. I go rambling around in social media to see what's out there, because from time to time I find stories that that have just happened, and I like to pass them along if it's at all possible. And when I do that, I use different browsers. I have a different browser that I manage that stuff on, the other stuff on, and then I've got my show notes in another browser. I use Firefox to surf the web, and I've got my show notes up in Safari. I'm a Mac guy, and I have to switch back and forth between the two. Anyway, I've got an article here that I want to pass along to you that was written for Forbes magazine by a climate activist and energy expert named Michael Schellenberger. It was written for Forbes by a guy who is a Time magazine hero of the environment, a Green Book Award winner, and a matter of a few hours after it was published by Forbes magazine, they pulled it. And it's still there. It's being passed around now by other online sources. Thank goodness. Because this guy you're not going to agree with everything he has to say, all right? You're just not. I don't agree with everything he has to say. But the majority of what he says in this particular piece, I think you will agree with. Because they are things you've been saying, things I have been saying for years. And he finally, rather than just accepting what he was being told, decided to do his own homework and learned a few lessons. And so he writes, on behalf of environmentalists everywhere, I would like to formally apologize for the climate scare we created over the last 30 years. Climate change is happening. It's just not the end of the world. It's not even our most serious environmental problem. I may seem like a strange person to be saying all of this. I've been a climate activist for 20 years and an environmentalist for 30. But as an energy expert asked by Congress to provide objective expert testimony and invited by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that's the IPCC, to serve as expert reviewer of its next assessment report, I feel an obligation to apologize for how badly we environmentalists have misled the public. Here are some facts few people know. Humans are not causing a sixth mass extinction. The Amazon is not the lungs of the world. Climate change is not making natural disasters worse. Fires have declined 25% around the world since 2003. the amount of land we use for meat, humankind's biggest use of land, has declined by an area nearly as large as Alaska. The buildup of wood, fuel, and more houses near forests, not climate change, explain why there are more and more dangerous fires in Australia and California. Carbon emissions have been declining in rich nations, including Britain, Germany, and France, since the mid-70s. Adapting to life below sea level made the Netherlands rich, not poor. We produce 25% more food than we need, and food surpluses will continue to rise as the world gets hotter. Habitat loss and the direct killing of wild animals are bigger threats to species than climate change. Wood fuel is far worse for people and wildlife than fossil fuels. Preventing future pandemics requires more, not less, industrial architecture, or agriculture, excuse me. I know that the above facts will sound like climate denialism to many people, but that just shows the power of climate alarmism. In reality, the above facts come from the best available scientific studies, including those conducted by or accepted by the IPCC, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, and other leading scientific bodies. Some people will, when they read this, imagine that I'm some right-wing anti-environmentalist. I am not. At 17, I lived in Nicaragua to show solidarity with the Sandinista Socialist Revolution. At 23, I raised money for Guatemalan women's cooperatives. In my early 20s, I lived in the semi-Amazon doing research with small farmers fighting land invasions. At 26, I helped expose poor conditions at Nike factories in Asia. I became an environmentalist at 16 when I threw a fundraiser for Rainforest Action Network. At 27, I helped save the last unprotected ancient redwoods in California. In my 30s, I advocated renewables and successfully helped persuade the Obama administration to invest $90 billion into them. Over the last few years, I helped save enough nuclear plants from being replaced by fossil fuels to prevent a sharp increase in emissions. Until last year, I mostly avoided speaking out against the climate scare, partly because I was embarrassed. After all, I am as guilty of alarmism as any other environmentalist. For years, I referred to climate change as an existential threat to human civilization and called it a crisis. But mostly, I was scared. I remained quiet about the climate disinformation campaign because I was afraid of losing friends and funding. The few times I summoned the courage to defend climate science from those who misrepresent it, I suffered harsh consequences. And so I mostly stood by and did nothing, or next to nothing, as my fellow environmentalists terrified the public. I even stood by as people in the White House and many in the news media tried to destroy the reputation and career of an outstanding scientist, good man, and friend of mine, Roger Pielke Jr., a lifelong progressive Democrat and environmentalist who testified in favor of carbon regulations. Why did they do that? Because his research proves natural disasters are not getting worse. But then, last year, things spiraled out of control. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said, "The world is going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change." Britain's most high-profile environmental group claimed, "Climate change kills children." The world's most influential green journalist, Bill McKibben, called climate change the greatest challenge humans have ever faced, and said it would wipe out civilizations. Mainstream journalists reported repeatedly that the Amazon was the lungs of the world, and that deforestation was like a nuclear bomb going off. As a result, half of the people surveyed around the world last year said they thought climate change would make humanity extinct. And in January, 1 out of 5 British children told pollsters they were having nightmares about climate change. Whether or not you have children, you must see how wrong this is. I admit I may be sensitive because I have a teenage daughter. After we talked about the science, she was reassured. But her friends are deeply misinformed and thus understandably frightened. I thus decided I had to speak out. I knew that writing a few articles wouldn't be enough. I needed a book to properly lay out all of the evidence. And so, my formal apology for our fear-mongering comes in the form of my new book, Apocalypse Never: Why Environmental Alarmism Hurts Us All. It is based on 2 decades of research and 3 decades of environmental activism. At 400 pages, with 100 of them endnotes, Apocalypse Never covers climate change, deforestation, plastic waste, species extinction, industrialization, meat, nuclear energy, and renewables. And coming up after the break, we'll get into some of the highlights of this book and the rest of what he has to say about environmental alarmism and what it's doing to us today. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast, diving into the second half of the Wednesday edition. And it's good to have you along. Thank you so much for being there. Really appreciate the fact that you make this part of your day. Do me a favor, share it with your friends. Let them know what you're listening to. Tell them, hey, give it a try. Just give it a couple of weeks. If at the end of a couple of weeks you're not satisfied, this show has an empty jar guarantee. Send us the empty jar and we'll... Oh, I'm sorry, that's that blue stuff. Never mind. Just share it with your friends. Okay, thanks. Oh, my word. It is the first day of July 2020. And we were diving into some of the things that were said by longtime climate activist and energy expert Michael Schellenberger. He's apologizing for 30 years of scare tactics, climate alarmism. It's a good read. The article is, I'm including it in the show notes. I just shared it on my personal Facebook page because I want all my friends to see it. And we were looking at what he just said about his book. It's based on 2 decades of research, 3 decades of environmental activism. It's 400 pages long, and 100 pages of it are the end notes. It's everything. One quarter of the book is nothing but resource material, notes on where to go find the proof of what he's saying. The book called Apocalypse Never covers climate change, deforestation, plastic waste, species extension, industrialization, meat, nuclear energy, and renewables. And some highlights from the book are factories and modern farming are the keys to human liberation and environmental progress. The most important thing for saving the environment is producing more food, particularly meat, on less land. The most important thing for reducing air pollution and carbon emissions is moving from wood to coal, to petroleum, to natural gas, to uranium. 100% renewables would require increasing the land use for energy from today's 0.5% to 50%. We should want cities, farms, and power plants to have higher, not lower, power densities. Vegetarianism reduces one's emissions by less than 4%. Greenpeace didn't save the whales. Switching from whale oil to petroleum and palm oil saved the whales. Free-range beef would require 20 times more land and produce 300% more emissions. Greenpeace dogmatism worsened forest fragmentation of the Amazon. the colonialist approach to guerrilla conservation in the Congo produced a backlash that may have resulted in the killing of 250 elephants. Why were we all so misled? In the final three chapters of Apocalypse Never, I expose the financial, political, and ideological motivations. Environmental groups have accepted hundreds of millions of dollars from fossil fuel interests. Groups motivated by anti-humanist beliefs forced the World Bank to stop trying to end poverty and instead make poverty sustainable. And status anxiety, depression, and hostility to modern civilization are behind much of the alarmism. Once you realize just how badly misinformed we have been, often by people with plainly unsavory or unhealthy motivations, it is hard not to feel duped. Will the book Apocalypse Never make any difference? There are certainly reasons to doubt it. The news media have been making apocalyptic pronouncements about climate change since the late 1980s and do not seem disposed to stop. The ideology behind environmental alarmism, that's Malthusianism, has been repeatedly debunked for over 200 years, and yet it is more powerful than ever. But there are also reasons to believe that environmental alarmism will, if not, come to an end, have diminishing cultural power. The coronavirus pandemic is an actual crisis that puts the climate crisis into perspective. Even if you think we have overreacted, COVID-19 has killed nearly 500,000 people and shattered economies around the globe. Scientific institutions, including WHO and IPCC, have undermined their credibility through the repeated politicization of science. Their future existence and relevance depends on new leadership and serious reform. Facts still matter, and social media is allowing for a wider range of new and independent voices to outcompete alarmist environmental journalists at legacy publications. Nations are reorienting toward the national interest and away from Malthusianism and neoliberalism, which is good for nuclear and bad for renewables. The evidence is overwhelming that our high-energy civilization is better for people and nature than the low-energy civilization that climate alarmists would return us to. And the invitations I received from IPCC in Congress late last year, after I published a series of criticisms of climate alarmism, are signs of a growing openness to new thinking about climate change and the environment. Another sign is the response to my book from climate scientists, conservationists, and environmental scholars. Richard Rhodes, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Making of the Atomic Bomb, wrote, "Apocalypse Never is an extremely important book." One of the fathers of modern climate science, Tom Wigley, says, "This may be the most important book on the environment ever written. And then he wraps up with even more, where he's just promoting his book. And I get that the article in part is a book promotion. I get that. But this is the last thing. That's all I had hoped for in writing. If you've made it this far, I hope you'll agree that it's perhaps not as strange as it seems that a lifelong environmentalist, progressive, and climate activist felt the need to speak out against the alarmism. I further hope that you'll accept my apology. So this is the product of being honest. And you know about me and honesty. We have to be honest with ourselves, with our friends, with the world around us. And we have to be honest about what's happening all around us. We have to stop investing in the lie. We invest a lot in the lie. What is the lie? It's whatever you choose to deceive yourself with to make yourself feel better, or to make yourself angry, or to motivate yourself. Something you know isn't necessarily true, but you hold on to it because it makes you feel better somehow, even though it's not true. We invest a lot in the lie. And as a result, we eventually will slam full speed into the dead end that is the end of the lie. That dead end is the truth. That eventually happens. It always does. So, this guy, Michael Schellenberger, has finally come to grips with the fact that the science really doesn't back up the claims. The science doesn't indicate that the alarmism is necessary. The science actually backs up what the, quote, deniers have been saying all along. We joke about it from time to time. We post memes about how these people have been predicting that the sky is falling since the 70s. They warned us we were going to have a freeze, that the world was going into a new ice age if we continued polluting the atmosphere. They've warned us so many different things. And whenever we point out to them that these things haven't happened, they take credit for it. They say, yes, yeah, because people were listening. We've changed things. We've just postponed it. We've put it off a bit longer, but we still have a lot of work to do. And then idiots like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez step up and say, we have 12 years. If we don't do something right now, it's the end of everything in 12 years. You better do something, or...
It's the end of the world as we know it.
But it's not. It's not the end of the world as we know it. And the solutions proposed by the alarmists actually are worse than the situation we're in now. The cure is worse than the sickness. So we have to be honest with ourselves. We have to be honest with the world around us. And we have to seek the truth. And fortunately, this guy has sought the truth. He's still a progressive. He's still really on the wrong side of things politically. But when it comes down to what he knows, he's had to be honest with himself and people around him. And as a result, the article he wrote for Forbes that you just heard was pulled. Most likely because, well, he isn't sticking to the script provided by the climate alarmists. And he is now probably going to be canceled as a result of it. And this does happen in the scientific community. They do blackball people. They do drum people out. The IPCC, which he mentions in his article, has blackballed scientists. You know that figure that they quote all the time, that 97% of scientists agree that climate change, man-made climate change, is destroying the planet? That's a lie. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that's a UN organization, is made up of a handful of scientists. And if I recall correctly, this is off the top of my head, I think at the time it was 79 people, 79 scientists, climate scientists. It was 97% of that group that had consensus. The other 3% who said, we can't put our names on this, were blackballed by the IPCC. They lost their positions at universities and in government. They were punished for not agreeing with something that could not be scientifically supported. And so that happens. It remains to be seen if it will be happening to Michael Schellenberger, but you can almost bet it will. Probably not a bad idea to pick up his book either. Because we have to be honest about what's really happening. Because we have to embrace the truth instead of investing more in the lie. This is the Daily Perspective Podcast, diving into the final segment for this first day of July 2020. Thanks for being along for the ride. Got a couple of stories. I'm going to try to get to both of them before we pull the door closed on this episode. An Atlanta Police Department homicide detective has sided with Atlanta Police Officer Garrett Rolfe, who has been charged with felony murder in the Rayshard Brooks case, arguing that he would have brought charges, 10 charges, against Brooks had he survived the incident. Quote, Atlanta PD, this is quoting the Daily Wire, Atlanta PD detective assigned to the Rayshard Brooks investigation says he would have charged Brooks, not Rolfe, with 10 counts, including multiple felonies. So posted a guy named Philip Holloway. He's a legal analyst for CNN who specializes in criminal law, police law, civil and administrative litigation. He captioned a screenshot of Hogan's letter and notes, usually law enforcement are witnesses for the state, but this is from a defense filing. It says, I am the homicide MIT, that's major incident team, investigator that was assigned the case involving officers Rolfe and Devin Bronson regarding their interaction with Rayshard Brooks. The detective wrote in the letter, he said, I was calling in from my home shortly after the incident occurred and began my investigation upon my arrival to the scene. I gathered all the audio and video evidence as well as interviewed witnesses that would speak with me on the scene. My investigation showed that Rayshard Brooks' behavior did in fact warrant several federal charges. But before I was able to pursue those charges, I was informed that Brooks had died, negating the necessity for that portion of my investigation. Hogan then lays out 10 charges he said he would have sought against Brooks. 1, DUI. DUI less safe, a violation of OCGA 40-6-391. 2, felony obstruction, 2 counts. 3, aggravated assault against a police officer, 2 counts. 4, battery against a police officer, 2 counts. 5, theft by taking. 6, removal of weapon from a public official. 7, robbery. In his struggle to evade arrest and revocation of his probation, Mr. Brooks concussed Officer Brosnan, stole his taser, shot him with the taser, fled with the taser, and then pointed and fired the taser at Officer Rolfe. The motion states. So, an officer who reported to the scene to do the investigation has sided with the police officers in this case. I hope for his safety and his family's safety that he's getting some help as far as security is concerned. And now to the other story. And this one's actually really important. Regardless of where you may live, you need to know what's happening across America now with conservatives trying to be reelected to their offices. The Never Trumpers are now targeting GOP senators for defeat. The veil has fallen from Never Trumpers, and they've revealed themselves to be just another Democratic Party political group. So much for honor and integrity as a reason why they're different from Trump. They can no longer be referring to themselves as Republicans opposed to Trump because there's no difference between them and the opposition party. The anti-Trump Lincoln Project, you've probably heard of the Lincoln Project, right? It's targeting several GOP senators for defeat in November, presumably because they don't like the cut of their trousers or something. Actually, they're no different than the cancel culture, which goes after people's families and jobs because they don't like their politics. The group tweeted, Kavanaugh tried to strike down a 4-year precedent, but instead strikes down Susan Collins' 24-year Senate career. They're noting that Kavanaugh's vote against a 4-year-old precedent in Monday's ruling on a Louisiana abortion law. The group used the tweet to spotlight the predicament for Collins, who's facing an extremely difficult reelection due in large part to her Kavanaugh confirmation vote. This year, the Lincoln Project has also targeted GOP Senators Cory Gardner of Colorado, Martha McSally of Arizona, and Tom Tillis of North Carolina, who are likewise fighting for their political lives. All of those senators are fairly strong supporters of Donald Trump, except Collins, whose vote to confirm Kavanaugh, despite the blood-curdling threats of liberal feminist groups, was as close to a JFK profile in courage as it gets in this day and age. You probably recall the photo of Collins in a Senate hallway being confronted by another senator, a Democrat senator. And the consternation and stress on her face as she was being lectured for her decision. What the Lincoln Project is doing is despicable. You can't call yourself a Republican and work to flip the Senate to Democrats. And there are plenty of Republicans calling these guys out for doing it. Veteran GOP communications strategist Matt McCoyack told Fox News, it's ridiculous to claim that a Republican-backed effort would try to flip the Senate to the Democrats. There are basically zero Republicans in the country that want to see a Democratic Senate. If they were just focused on Trump, that would be one thing. What's especially galling to Republicans is the group invoking a moral authority to oppose a sitting president of their party. He says, to me, it proves that this is a Democratic-funded effort. These operatives are being used to advance the Democrats' political agenda. They're going to wrap themselves in moral superiority, but the net effect of all of this is that they're giving Democrats everything they want, and they're spending Democratic donor money to do it. Another GOP strategist hit the nail on the head, Brian Walsh, argued that the Lincoln Project is taking it too far. If you're also grouping in Republican senators who could rightfully serve as a necessary check and balance if the White House changes hands in November, it's hard to understand the strategy behind saying you're inherently a Republican organization, but you want to give full control of the government to the Democrats in November. The Never Trumpers claim that in order to defeat Trumpism, his supporters have to fall, too. The group wrote, this president's actions are possible only with the craven acquiescence of congressional Republicans. Congressional Republicans have embraced and copied Mr. Trump's cruelty and defended and even adopted his corruption. Mr. Trump and his enablers have abandoned conservatism and longstanding Republican principles and replaced it with Trumpism, an empty faith led by a bogus prophet. So to rid the U.S. of Trumpism, they want to de-Trumpify the entire party? In the process, of course, radical Democrats would take over the government. Where are your precious ideas of conservatism and the Republican principles then? Perhaps these never Trump, never GOP Republicans believe the Democrats will eat them last. Don't count on it. Invariably, traitors get their just desserts. After all, Benedict Arnold died poor and alone in England. The Democrats aren't going to care unless they bend the knee and give their obeisance to their agenda. How far will the never-Trumpers be from Republicanism then? Here's the thing, and I've said this all along. Every time this story comes up and we hear about these particular Republicans fighting against those who support our president, these people are fighting for the Democrats. They are willing to accept a Democrat president, a Democrat House, and a Democrat Senate just to get Donald Trump out of the White House. And somehow they have invested in the lie so deeply that they're ignoring the fact that once the Democrats get in control again, they will ignore the Constitution and do whatever they bloody well please. And there will never be another conservative president of the United States. And there will never be another conservative House or Senate. And the Constitution of the United States will be shredded finally. And all of these people who are rioting in the streets right now will have won. These people are willing to surrender the United States of America to those who would destroy it. they're willing to surrender this country to the people who hate it just because they don't like the president you elected. These people are not only disrespecting the president, they disrespect the people of the United States and believe they're stupid for electing this president. And in that sense, they are the same. They are progressives. And they need to be taken out of office. And I need to take myself out of the studio. It's time to go. God bless you. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the Thursday edition of the podcast. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.